Good morning. Welcome to the Ventura Center for Spiritual Living. I'm Reverend Bonnie Rose, and it is a delight to spend this morning with you. We're going to jump right in, and I'm going to turn you over to Lonnie Cassidy, our board president.
Good morning. Happy end of February. Wow. So happy you could join us this morning. As usual, we have a special, special day for you. Our beautiful Linda praying us in, and our joyful Gia coming to rock the house. And of course, Bonnie, I heard you had a talk today.
Maybe, we'll see.
Okay, well, yeah. It's all as it should be.
We have an awesome reading, though. A great poem from Brother Hugh.
Hugh? Yeah. I'm so sorry. It's the COVID.
It's the COVID.
COVID brain.
Yeah.
And of course, an awesome reading by Hugh.
Right.
I'm going to go back to my seat now.
Okay. Thanks, Lonnie. Okay. So let's hear from Bill Hadris, who is our youth and family person, and he's going to enlighten us on the ways of youth.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Bill Hadris with Youth and Family. God is all that there is. The eternal life that has always been and always will be. God is all that we are, the individualized expression of that one life. We are all connected eternally. We are one. Here are some connections to ponder. Have you ever thought of a friend or family member, and then the phone chimes? And it's them? Did you ever have the same idea and say it at the same time as someone else? Have you ever done something special for someone only to find out that it was what they secretly wanted? Have you ever thought about something you wanted to happen? And almost instantly, someone did it for you. It is not a coincidence that things like this happen. We are all connected as God. This connection is also eternal. Any person or pet that we have ever loved, we can feel that love forever. Even when they are not in this physical world anymore. Love is always there. So I invite you to repeat after me. I know my connection through love.
I know my connection through love.
And so it is.
And so it is.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Bill. That's wonderful. Okay, and here's Linda, our practitioner. She's going to give us a prayer.
So everyone here in the sanctuary, wherever you're sitting in front of your screen, just take in a deep breath and just sigh it out. And take in one more, centering in the seat you're in, the intent you have for being here with this community. And I know that the divine spirit of love, of creativity, of inspiration, of care and concern is all around and everywhere present. Where you are, where we are, with each individual, as an expression of the God light, God love, God peace. As we are all connected in this, I know that the unfolding today, as we're here together to take one more step on our own individual and collective spiritual journey, the journey that let's go of all that does not serve us as loving, kind, and peaceful. All those thoughts can just melt away. The ones that our ego wants to push up. And as we go through the service today, we're inspired and enriched on our spiritual journey, our journey to be love, to be loving, not only to the people in our family or our community, all over the world. And then, most especially, being sure that we're nurturing the God love of our own self, the God expression that's there. So through music, through words, through just the loving presence that you're experiencing in this community and in this service, may you be well served to serve yourself, open up more love, more care, more peace, and you take that out into your world, expressing it to whomever you meet, wherever you are. And I know I am so thankful for the journey of spirituality, the journey of love, the journey of the divine that has brought me here today with you. I'm so thankful that it continues with each step, each meditation, each reading. It expands the God self within me as it does in you. And I know as the service unfolds, you will feel the expansion of the God self. And I know that my words are made manifest as they're spoken, as I release them into divine law. And together we say,
and so it is. Thank you. Let us stay in that place of beauty and grace that Linda's open heart drew us to with such wisdom. We breathe and we feel our hearts, our bodies, our minds relax even deeper as we take a moment to pause and to listen to our sacred reading.
To begin with, The Sweet Grass, a poem by Mary Oliver. Will the hungry ox stand in the field and not eat of the sweet grass? Will the owl bite off its own wings? Will the lark forget to lift its body in the air or forget to sing? Will the rivers run upstream? Behold, I say, behold, the reliability and the finery and the teachings of this gritty earth gift. Eat bread and understand comfort. Drink water and understand delight. Visit the garden where the scarlet trumpets are opening their bodies for the hummingbirds who are drinking the sweetness, who are thrillingly gluttonous. For one thing leads to another. Soon you will notice how stones shine underfoot. Eventually, tides will be the only calendar you believe in. And someone's face, whom you love, will be as a star, both intimate and ultimate. And you will both be heart-shaken and respectful. And you will hear the air itself like a beloved whisper, "Oh, let me for a while longer enter the two beautiful bodies of your lungs." What do I risk to tell you this, which is all I know? Love yourself, then forget it, then love the world.
Anchoring in that place of loving all that is, the manifest world, the body, nature, our lungs, the air we breathe, our presence here together, whether near or far, We rest in the wonder of all of that. And we breathe in deeply. And exhale, opening our eyes in love and in service to what is, as it is, and so it is.
Good morning. Moment of silence between each drop of rain holds all the stillness of a beautiful refrain. Pause with each breath. That starts a flame in our heart, fire of creation. We're sisters and brothers, side by side across this land, walking together, step by step.
Need to get my feng shui right, you know, before I can speak. And I also touched my face, so just pardon me while I hand sanitize a bit. Before we jump into the talk, I want to just do the flower dedication, which is to somebody lovely and special. These beautiful flowers are dedicated with love and gratitude to Rina Rogart for her meticulous and loving care of our bunnies and help with our beautiful gardens. Thank you so much. Thanks, Raina. Okay, so a couple of things. I wanted to start by telling you that last week I had an epiphany that really stuck with me. You know how sometimes you have an epiphany and next day you say, what was that again? This one really stuck. And it was in a strange place, a place that doesn't even exist. It was on Zoom. We all know that Zoom is an illusion, right? Much like television. But anyway, it was on Zoom. And I was with a group of people from around the world, and we were having a conversation about volunteers. And it was about, 9:30 p.m., because we were dealing with people on the other side of the globe. So let's just say it was past my bedtime, so I might have been a little more vulnerable and open, you know, being that I go to bed early. And all of a sudden, as we were talking, we were having this conversation about creating the right spiritual inner context in order for volunteers to really thrive and bloom. Like, what spiritual values can we hold and instill in a circle of volunteers so that they can begin to find their own spiritual value and then hold that for more volunteers or more participants and more and more and more. And so I saw these concentric circles getting smaller and smaller as we focused on the volunteers, but then I also saw the circles getting larger and larger as it began to ripple out to the world and to bless everybody. And I had this thought, this is exactly what we talk about in this teaching and in other mystical teachings. This is spirit becoming matter so that matter can become spirit. This is the word becoming flesh so that the flesh can become the word again and then keep on this Mobius cycle. This is the void becoming form so that the form can create void again. And there's this beautiful, beautiful cycle going forth, back and forth, around and around in this Mobius strip. I hope everybody knows what a Mobius strip is. I don't have a demonstration here, but it's a symbol of infinite, where there is no inside and there is no outside, where there is no there are no opposites. And I was just feeling this so deeply; it felt so real to me that I had to speak of it. And so I spoke of it to the group, and they said, "Uh-huh, okay," but it didn't matter. It didn't matter because I felt it so deeply. I felt it so deeply, and for the next week and on, I just did this reverence walk of walking in the miracle of life and spirit and matter and void and form and word becoming flesh. All of it felt so real to me. The name of this message is Lost in Spaciousness. And I chose this name largely because of the old TV show. You know, anybody remember that? Chris, I know you do. You guys do. Yeah, those of us of a certain age remember the old show. I believe there's a new one out, too. I posted it on Facebook on the group page, and those costumes were so bad. I hope we don't dress like that in the future, although they might have been talking about now, if we're not dressing like that now. But you know, you think about back to that show where there's this whole family and they're all wearing like these velour polyester type costumes of pastel colors, and there's a bad guy and there's a robot that looks kind of like a vacuum cleaner. And that was it, man. That was it. But I love the idea of lost in spaciousness, because I think sometimes in mystical teachings we do get lost in spaciousness. Spaciousness is a beautiful thing, and when we talk about the infinite, oh my gosh, how many times have you or I or any of us said, you know, this is a finite existence, but we turn our attention to the infinite. But I think sometimes we do that at the expense of the finite. It's what I was saying before, the word becomes flesh, and the flesh becomes word. Spirit becomes matter, and matter becomes spirit. I'm beginning to realize as I start to embrace this idea, as we start to embrace this idea of a greater experience of an incarnational reality, meaning that God is in form, that yes, the infinite is in the finite, but the finite is also in the infinite. Perhaps the finite is the infinite in a finite disguise. And that when we talk about impermanence, yeah, that we say that the body is impermanence, that the world of form is impermanent, but is it? You know, when we turn to our friend the compost cycle, or when we turn to our friend the ocean, we see that everything is still in existence. It's just changing form. Only the form is changing, but the essence is still evolving always. And so, you know, where does this take us today? This feels very esoteric, and I almost don't have the words to describe it. But what I came down to was this idea that as we get lost in looking at the spiritual, the spaciousness, the infinite, we sometimes neglect the finite and what may seem to be confined, most particularly in the beautiful creation known as the body. Not only the body of God that is the entire universe, but also our own body, our own beautiful bodies that are a gift. Our own beautiful bodies that Hugh spoke of in the sacred reading by Mary Oliver, these beautiful vessels called the lungs that take the air in and then do wonderful things with it and then let it out. We neglect and almost disdain the beauty of our magical, infinite, powerful bodies that are spirit and matter, word and flesh, void and form. How do we get this way? I think it seems to be part of the culture, but I also think that religion might be a bit of a culprit sometimes. I'm wondering if anybody was part of a religion that where we were taught that our bodies were shameful. Anybody? Show of hands. Okay. All right. Show of pinkies if you're too embarrassed. Okay. We're taught that our bodies are shameful or less than, that our bodies are less than somehow. You know, I have to say, I'm probably the only Science of Mind minister that did this week as I was preparing for my talk yesterday. I actually Googled mortification of the flesh. Because I don't know that much about mortification of the flesh. I know it's in a musical. Mary Poppins, you know. Mary has a lustful thought about Bert, and then she beats herself with a broom while he's singing Chim Chimney. Not really. No, it's in a different musical. It's in a musical called Sweeney Todd, and the scenario is very similar, having to do with beating oneself for lustful thoughts. I won't go into it any further than that. Just watch the musical. It's really not very lighthearted. It's very depressing, but I like it. So anyway, I don't know much about mortification of the flesh, but I did read what I read about it. Some of it wasn't quite so bad as I thought, but what I did read was that it's supposed to, mortification of the flesh is supposed to subdue our basic urges through punishment. Mostly through punishment. Some of the more modern versions of mortification of the flesh were things like, you know, your spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. Like your spirit is willing to get up at 6 a.m. and then when 6 a.m. comes and the alarm goes off, you're hitting the snooze button. And this one particular priest, I believe, said, you know, if you've made the intention to get up at 6 a.m., then don't hit the snooze button, just get up. That's giving your spirit, fulfilling your promise to yourself. But there is this whole system of mortification of the flesh where people think that the body is dirty, that the body is less than, and that the body is somehow inadequate, that there is contempt for the body, that the body is not spiritual, that the body is less than in the eyes of God. Let me read you this quote, as a matter of fact. This is the history that has influenced many of us who grew up in the Judeo-Christian tradition or in a culture that was heavily influenced by the Judeo-Christian tradition. And this is from a podcast by Richard Rohr where he's being interviewed. Richard Rohr says, Luther says, we are a pile of manure. And I say, ha-ha, Luther, I like manure, so there's that. I love it. It's good. It's great fertilizer. Okay, Calvin says, we're totally depraved. Sorry, it's funny to me. I'm sorry. And Jonathan Edwards says, we're sinners in the hands of an angry God. This is the most famous American sermon ever published, according to Richard Rohr. In other words, our embodiment has been shamed. But the body is part of the equation and should be named as good. That's why Jesus took on an embodied symbol for the communion ritual. He didn't say, this is my spirit, this is my idea, this is my soul. He said, this is my body. And then he used the harsher Greek word, sarx, not soma. Sarx is almost like the word we would use for flesh. It has a slightly racier connotation. And that's the word he uses again and again in John's gospel. Unless you eat my flesh, you must consume my sark, my total embodied self. So we're called to embrace our total embodied self, embrace God through our embodied self, and yet we don't want to do it. And it's just a pervasive race consciousness thing that I think just seeps in without us even knowing it. I was listening to the same podcast, and Richard Rohr was telling a story about this time when he was a young priest and he was giving communion. And first of all, you know that in many of the Catholic churches I've attended, I have relatives that are Catholic, you know, all the kids are in the church, right? And sometimes they're quite noisy. And this is a story about, a three-year-old boy that, you know how some kids have a voice that'll just peel the paint off the walls? They're so loud, and they're so enthusiastic and so loud. So this boy was in church with his mother. He was sitting near the front, and his mother went up to receive the host, and the little boy bellowed in his little boy voice, "Mommy, where are you going?" And she's like, just wait a minute, I'm okay. "Mommy, where are you going?" And she goes, "I'm going to go receive the body of Christ." And the little boy goes, "Even Jesus' bottom?" It's very literal. But it also shows that perhaps that little kid, even at the age of 3, knew that there were maybe parts of the body that were unacceptable. You know, I see my nephew raising his son, my nephew and his wife, Sylvia. They're raising their son, and they're doing such great jobs as parents. I don't know where they got it from, because, maybe my sister. Sorry, Judy, if you're listening, but I couldn't do as good a job as they're doing. But, you know, this little kid, he's what, 2-3 years old, and they're doing what good, I've heard good parents do, is they teach him all of the right names for the body parts, right, for the more intimate body parts. And bless his little heart, Shep, when they're out in public, he wants to pronounce the body parts of everybody in the vicinity, you know, and sometimes he gets it wrong, and people don't necessarily want to hear that. The FedEx delivery guy or the woman in Starbucks doesn't necessarily want to hear that he or she have a different body part than they actually have. And so I know that my nephew had to take him aside and say, "Hey, buddy, you know what, some things are private, some things we don't talk about." And I think that that might be puzzling. That might be puzzling. It might be too subtle for a 3-year-old, and they may not get that. That may, through no ill intentions of the parents, instill a certain amount of shame about body and body parts and what have you. And you know, it's a narrow way. Of course, we don't necessarily want to announce all of that stuff in public, but also we want to know that the private things are beautiful too. And my point is that it seems to me that there is a certain amount of cultural shame, possibly fostered by some of the Judeo-Christian tradition and other religions as well, I'm sure, and that we all sort of embody this rather than embodying the majesty and the magic of our bodies, the infinite spirit that is our body. You know, I was thinking again, I'm also not trying to diss any religion, because I don't know enough about any one religion except perhaps this one to be able to be critical, and I also don't know enough about anything, really, as I'm discovering, to be totally critical about anything, really. But what I'm hearing, like from the Buddhist tradition, where I see a trap might be in that, you know, I read this article the other day, and it was by Sylvia Boorstein, who is a wonderful Buddhist teacher, and she said, I want to get this title right, so I'm going to read it. The name of the article was, where is it? The name of the title was, "If There Is No Self, Why Does My Arthritis Hurt?" And I thought that was wonderful. Now, I actually have a theory about, if there's no self, why does her arthritis hurt? But I won't go into that. It's beyond the scope of this talk. But she was speaking as if that certain things in Buddhism were easy to accept for her, whereas the idea of no self was not easy to accept for her. And there was this drive in her to be able to understand that. And I can understand that too. I really, you know, it's wonderful to understand these concepts and these ideas. And yet, I've noticed in all traditions, and you Buddhist people can correct me if I'm wrong, but there is a certain lusting and attachment to doing it right, to being so above the body that we are completely in nirvana or something like that, around the idea of no self, that we are completely detached from everything. And then at the same time, we have these beautiful bodies that are magical and here to serve us. And yes, I think no self is that we don't have to create a false construct around who we are and what the body is, but we are still sometimes, I believe, creating a false construct around the idea that the body is somehow contaminated and somehow dirty. It is a pile of manure, as Martin Luther said, or worse, you know? And Cynthia Borstein's conclusion I thought was so beautiful. She said, yes, there is no self, and life is precious. It's both. It's yes and. And then in this teaching, our relationship to the body. You know, I believe this is true. We often talk about great ideas, and we kind of leave the body out of the picture, like the body is an effect, which it is to a certain extent. But we say things based on ancient wisdom, such as, I am not my body. I might, after studying this material, say, I am not only my body. That my body is part of the mystery. What I just said, I am not my body, I am, is more Vedantic in tradition, whereas my body is a part of the mystery, so I examine my body and all of its forces and all of my feelings about it. That's more tantric, going into it rather than divorcing ourselves from it. I am not my body. I am not only my body. And if I am my body, my body is amazing, no matter what, because it is. And then there's the church of the self that has all kinds of shenanigans around all kinds of things. You know that I have changed the word sin in my mind to shenanigans because it sounds much gentler and sweeter, because sin is really just shenanigans. We don't have to get too carried away with that. You know, my own struggles with my own body, I'll just give you an example of that that happened this past week. I was worshiping the god of stoicism. Because I'm German and frugal. And I had gotten these hiking shoes. I got a gift from the board, a gift certificate at REI, which is a fabulous outdoor gear store. And I got these hiking shoes, and I knew they might be a little small, but they were really cute, and they looked really good, and they were pink, and I loved them, and they were tearing up my feet. Tearing up my feet. And then I had this other pair of old shoes that I wore, and they were tearing up my feet in all of the places that the first pair of hiking shoes missed. So I went on for about 6 months struggling, trying to get these shoes to obey my feet when really my feet were obeying the shoes. And finally, last week, 2 weeks ago, whatever it was, I just said, you know what? You don't have to do this. Why don't you be kind to your body? Why don't you recognize that you deserve to have comfortable hiking shoes? Why don't you spend the money and get some new shoes? And I did. And I put them on. And I hiked. And it was like what we used to do when we had a full church, when I would make everybody go, oh! It was like the angels sang because my feet were comfortable and it was wonderful. And I was saying to myself, why were you so disrespectful of your feet? Why were you so disrespectful of your body? You know, it made me think about my parents. Like after I was born, I'm sure they held me and they counted my little toes. And they never would have wanted harm to come to those little toes. But I was there, just like the guy in Sweeney Todd, beating my feet with a whip called hiking shoes. And I'm so grateful to be out of that cycle. And I'm encouraged to look for more places where I or we can look at where we're taking our body for granted or look at where we are abusing our bodies and do something different. You know, and really what it is, I think that we function on this continuum. We function on this continuum of either intense body shame or body hatred to perhaps disdain, to perhaps indifference. That's what the hiking shoes thing was. It was indifference. And then hopefully we keep moving down this continuum farther and farther and farther till we get to a place of celebration and grace and wonder at the miracle that our body is. Our body is the incarnation of wholeness. You get that? Our body is the incarnation of Christ. Our body is the word becoming flesh. Our body is spirit becoming matter. Our body is void becoming form. It is of the Creator. It is of grace. It is of love. And it is up to us to remember that and treat it that way. So how do we do that? How do we do that? Well, I think it's worthy to do what I was just mentioning, to look at where we're not doing it in a kind manner, in a kind and respectful manner, knowing that we've all been conditioned to be this way and that we know not we can't necessarily change on a dime, but we can change pretty quickly. That it is normal for many of us to ignore the body or to ignore it or to treat it like it's less than somehow. But what if we could shift that status quo? And it's not even a what if. The truth is that we can shift that status quo with a little bit of conscious work and then living like the truth is true. You know, the conscious work is taking the time to listen and to watch. What I said before, to notice where we are in that continuum. Do I have body shame? Do I have body disdain? Do I have body indifference? Do I have body celebration? Where are we in that continuum? We're probably in different places for different parts of our lives and different parts of our bodies. We can also notice perhaps how we learn to get that way and let it go, but that's not as important as just noticing where we are and then doing something different. Doing something different. I'll tell you what worked for me. What worked for me was having that revelation, and I'm hoping I'm able to impart some of that right now, that we truly are the flesh of God, and that means that we are love incarnate. So having that revelation and then living like that truth is true. For me, it meant slowing down, turning within and listening, asking, do I really want this or do I want to feel better? And then not only slowing down inside, but slowing down outside as well. Moving slowly through life and treating everything with reverence. As it said in the reading, love yourself, absolutely. And then she said forget about it. I say not necessarily forget about it, but understand that yes, we love ourselves, but there's more. Love the world as well. And so for days, I've been going through my life, all of the mundane tasks of my life, grocery shopping, cleaning, working with the animals, all kinds of things, writing, speaking, recording, singing, all of the mundane tasks that I do, just with a greater sense of reverence and saying, wow, this is my body. This life is my body. Can I take it in and revere it and know that this truth is true and live like this truth is true? So again, I am creating those circles that I first spoke about, that if I'm willing to live like my body is the truth of God, if my body is the flesh of the divine, then I inspire others to live like their body is the flesh of the divine, and then they inspire others to live like their body is the flesh of the divine, and more and more and more, because it is. We are the flesh of the divine. If this has been foreign and a little bit esoteric, I hope it hasn't been. It makes sense to me. It doesn't mean that it makes sense to everybody, though. But I'd like to share one more story that I hope will make it really clear. In this podcast that I've been listening to, Richard Rohr is being interviewed, and one of the people that is interviewing him, her name is Bree Stoner, and she is a young mom. She has two children. I believe one is infant-like, and the other is about two or three. And she's also a student of a contemplative school. And she said in the podcast how difficult it is for her as a mother to spend time in contemplation. She really wants to spend time in contemplation. Not only does she want to, but it's a requirement of the school that she's attending to spend some time in contemplation. And she says that she gets up in the morning to do it early before her kids wake up. But her kids, man, they know mom is up, and that is like a beacon for them to get out of their little beds if they can and come to her or need her attention. It's very similar to doing a recording for the choir, by the way, when I sit down to record a piece for the choir, and that is a beacon to the entire animal kingdom where the dogs start barking. And last time, the cat sat in my lap and meowed into the microphone. And then my rabbit, who is like a a Roman emperor sometime. I call her Caligula. She's throwing bowls and plates around, and all their clattering is in the background. Anyway, Bree's children, she sits down to contemplate, and she is a magnet for their attention. And she was upset about this, and she was talking to her teacher, James Finley, and she was saying, what can I do about this? I don't know what to do. I'm gonna fail at contemplation. And James Finley very wisely said to her, okay, you be you, and me, James, I'll be God. And so Bree said, I'm failing. I'm not able to do my contemplative practice like I want to. And James Finley, as God, said, oh, Bree, I see that you wake up with so much love in your heart for me, and you want to connect with me, and that's a beautiful thing. And because I so badly want to connect with you, I reactivate my habitation within your beautiful children, and we run to you. We run to you so that we can feel your loving arms around us. Richard Rohr's response to that was, how does he do that? He was speaking about James Finley, but I think he was also talking about God. You know, this is an amazing mystery that we are in, and if we're just seeing it as ideas and spaciousness and infinite, we're missing out on half of the story. I invite all of us to start to develop greater reverence, greater love, greater peace, greater appreciation, greater celebration of the body of wholeness, the body of Christ, the form, the matter, and know that it's all God, no matter what. Let's do that now, and let us pray.